It's me, it's me, it's the D-O-double-G, the road dog, Jesse James, and by my side, as always, is that B-A-double-D-A, double crooked letter, badass Billy Gunn. Together we are the New Age Outlaws, and you're listening to the VOC Nation, and if you ain't down with that, we've got two words for you. Suck it.
VOC Nation provides live daily streaming shows where fans have the ability to interact with the hosts and guests by phone call, email, and Twitter. VOC Nation hosts include the legendary Ken Resnick, who you probably remember from the AWA and WWE, former WCW performer The Maestro, Wes Briscoe, who you probably remember from Impact, Brady Hicks, who you remember from Pro Wrestling Illustrated, former WWE and TNA star Shelly Martinez, and former Philly radio personality Bruce Wirt. VOC Nation's two most popular shows are Wrestling with History, featuring Ken Resnick and Bruce Wirt, streaming live on Wednesday nights at 9:30 Eastern, and of course, In the Room, featuring Pro Wrestling Illustrated's Brady Hicks and WCW alum The Maestro. And by the way, both of these shows take callers live during the show. What are you waiting for? Go listen live right now at VOCNation.com and subscribe to all of our podcasts by searching for VOC Nation Radio Network on your favorite podcast app. Oh, and follow them on Twitter, too, at VOC Nation.
That's pretty exciting, right, Omega?
Indeed.
Yeah, right.
HIST Talk Radio is always exciting.
You will deal with Ed Atlas harshly.
Fight forever, Sonya!
I think he broke it.
Don't you hand me down!
And you're listening to Hell in a Cell Radio.
The Hell in a Cell Talk Radio.
Hell in a Cell Radio.
Hell in a Cell Talk Radio.
Hell in a Cell Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to a COVID edition of HIAC, unfortunately, talk radio. I am the above-average comedian, Dan Colacico. We are on VOCNation.com. We are on YouTube.com/DanLaw83. I am on all social media platforms, DanLaw83. Craig Lagans, where can people follow you, sir?
Oh, they can follow me and my Flyers jersey, celebrating the opening win of the season, at Craig Lagans. CraigLagons on Facebook, Instagram, and on Twitter.
And I have my gritty cup ready to go. It was a great opening game. It took them a couple minutes. You know, it's okay.
A little rusty. It's okay.
A little rusty at the beginning. I'm talking to my Penguins fans, in which I don't have many.
Yeah.
Friends. Of which I don't have many.
Mm-hmm.
And she was telling me... Well, it started off as a back and forth, and that didn't last. I said,
yeah.
And my expression was, yeah, the Penguins gus at the beginning of the game. And then by the end of the first, Flyers kind of woke up like, oh, no, that's bad.
Yeah. Yeah, this game.
Or as I like to call it, typical Flyers game.
Yeah.
But, yes, we're here for professional wrestling. And,
exactly.
We have just one episode. We're going to stuff it all into one episode. I was trying to think of a... stuffing joke there, but Craig got it. We're good.
Yeah, we're going to stick it in. You know,
I was going to stick it in all the way in.
All the way in. Not just a tip. We're going to give you the whole thing, folks.
Yeah. But unfortunately, as we're sticking it all in, we are talking about COVID. And I think, well, this is technically the 15th outbreak in wrestling. Is that where we're at now?
Yeah, the safety precautions that are being done, things that are being taken care of, and everything that can be done will be done. But when you do things like, oh, I don't know, fly in very old, autoimmune, susceptible people for a one-shot telecast, and you use said people for less than 10 to 30 seconds, you kind of run the risk of having your major people, your stars, i.e. your world champion, even risking catching something from these folks. And for those of you who don't know, and you will, if you watch Monday Night Raw, you already do know our WWE heavyweight champion Drew McIntyre currently has COVID. He is being quarantined as we speak. I hope he's okay. And while that takes place in the Performance Center in Florida, in the very same state, on the other side, we found out that Chris Jericho also has that self-same
Awesome virus.
Awesome virus that's making its way throughout the country, crisscrossing the globe, and causing death totals to go up more per day. You know, it's very incredibly sad that the number of people that die every day, and it's not even the top story. You know, it's amazing.
Well,
what, yeah, it's amazing what a little insurrection will do.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's amazing where a country takeover would change that.
But this is it's affecting all sports. It's affecting my favorite basketball team, and it's affecting other teams that are currently playing in the NBA. But, you know, in wrestling, it's more susceptible because there's not enough protection. You're performing, for the most part, half naked. You know, it's a very open environment. And I don't know the safety precautions that are taken by the WWE, but again, I can only assume this happened when you fly in older people, older wrestlers, older, and just putting them in a situation with people that don't have it, and you're running the risk of somebody catching it. Now, I'm sure the WWE wouldn't have minded if it was a Baron Corbin or, you know, a Chad Gable, but it's your world heavyweight champion now who's in the middle of a big, you know, Royal Rumble main event against a past his prime superstar that in the match that shouldn't happen in the first place. But still, you have a big pay-per-view, to sell. And that kind of puts the kibosh on that.
I mean, technically, it's a pay-per-view, you still got to sell.
Yeah.
Technically.
Yeah.
We were kind of discussing this the other night.
Mm-hmm.
Last night on a hockey podcast. It's like, as much as I want to see all this, you know, we know people are going to get sick.
Yeah.
And unless you're in a bubble, it's the way it's going to happen. And I assume that WWE bubble is not as extensive as that early NHL bubble last year when they did the playoffs.
No.
I mean, we've already seen it be complete cluster F in the NBA.
Yeah. Now, and the NBA had the most secure bubble of all four sports. They didn't have any players come down with COVID.
Same
in
the NHL.
Bubble.
NHL and the NBA got the bubble figured out down. And I'm sure, because once they go in the playoffs, they're going back into a bubble.
Yeah.
You know, unless everybody's injected with a vaccine.
Yeah,
which
would be awesome.
Which I'll get to that off air.
Mm-hmm.
But once they're in the bubble, that's no longer a problem. It's been proven it'll work. But you never know. You never know. And as far as wrestling, it's been like the 13th time there's been a collection of talent that has gotten sick, talent or staff. And
yeah,
I was explaining last night on the hockey show, like, on All Play of the Puck, available on YouTube.com/DanLawley3 or go to Twitter.com/OPayPuckShow. Follow us. I guess it's part of COVID fatigue where my mind is telling me this is a bad idea. They should take a break. This is risking too much. There's a lot of people that are fine after, but there's a lot of people who get sick that are fine when they're sick, and then after they're sick, they have long-term issues.
Yeah.
I use my friend who's in fantastic shape. She got sick and she's been having stabbing headaches every single day for 6 months after.
Ouch.
And I think generally, again, I'd probably be okay. Kelly'd probably be okay. I'm still worried a little bit about it because I'm in such great shape. But, you know, it's not something, it's the after effects that scare me more.
Yeah.
Than getting it,
mm-hmm.
You know? And it's just, I don't know. It's like, I want to watch wrestling. I want to watch hockey. I want to watch basketball. Baseball, John Middleton took me out of baseball. I don't really care. my point is part of me is like, yes, thank you. I'm glad this is back. The other part of me is real, like, not taking it for granted kind of thing. It's the best I can explain it. As much as I want to see it, you know, as much as Jericho and I don't agree, I'm a nobody. It doesn't matter. Trust me. I don't want to see the guy get sick.
No.
I don't want to see Drew McIntyre get sick. I don't want to see anybody get sick. I don't. Call me the bleeding heart liberal. I don't care. I don't want to see. If it works out, I'll be happy. But at the same time, if they're agreeing to do this, we know this is going to happen.
Yeah.
Do we get out of our Goldberg Drew McIntyre match now?
Please.
Please? Is there one thing that comes from this is getting rid of that? Maybe I have one more jackhammer left in me.
No. Didn't you have a jackhammer in you like 5 years ago when you came back against Brock? Wasn't that your
jackhammer? Well, I saw the last match he was in, and he certainly didn't have a jackhammer in him there.
No, and I'm still having nightmares about how he almost killed The Undertaker or how they almost killed each other in the Far East, so I'd rather not have to do that again.
Hey, Ric Flair's going to date Lacey, huh?
My friend Muzz, and I know he doesn't listen, but I had to give him a shout-out. Well, he listened last week because I was on a rant. But my friend Muzz had a picture of Anna Nicole Smith and her 88-year-old husband and said, I'm going to tell my kids this is Lacey Evans and Ric Flair.
Very good. I like that. That's very good.
I don't know why or this is a thing or why it has to be a thing at all. Between these two, they tried the push with Lacey Evans before. Didn't really work. Nothing against Lacey. I just don't see her as a viable women's champion or a women's threat. She's got great size, and we know she doesn't work as a face. We already know that. Tried that and failed. But I don't know. The NXT curse goes for the tag teams and singles men, and goes to the singles women too. So every woman that's been called up from the NXT, save for Sasha, Bayley, and Charlotte, and Asuka for the most part, don't fare well.
Lacey looks so good, and the presentation, and I have such high hopes for Lacey, and I feel as you. It's like every time I'm like, oh, man.
Yeah.
I really wish that would work out.
Well, that spot, when Charlotte was gone, and when Becky was gone, the spot should have gone to Rhea Ripley.
Yeah.
Hey, she's hands down the best female wrestler on earth, on any company. The look, the size, her promos, her work in the ring, she's... And there's no one even close to her. So when in the absence of those two big superstar divas, she should have been shot right up to the top, and she could have had that. And she could even have that play that if you want to bring Rick back, even have that.
Sure.
Get her involved. Get him involved in a feud with her, and either her slapping him and saying. Or even if you want to play it up, when Charlotte comes back, Rick turns on Charlotte because, Charlotte, while you're away, I found the dirtiest player in the game with Rhea Ripley. She's the one I think is the future of this company, not you.
Yeah.
Rather than the old, I'm still a nature boy, ladies man at 72 years old.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I just thought it was odd. It would be interesting to see how that plays out going forward.
It's extremely odd. Everything on either show is extremely odd. None of the booking makes sense. I have no idea why. Still don't know why during the Legends show, Randy Orton had to berate and humiliate every legend there again for what.
I do like him taking the fireball to the face, though. Like the fireball. Never get tired of the old fireball.
I get tired of Randy Orton versus Triple H. I get tired of that real fast.
That's another thing that's making me laugh. Here we are getting news that your champion has COVID, and here's Triple H walking in the door, spitting water all over the place like an asshole. God damn it.
Yeah, that's what the people want to see. We've lost our world champion, so we'll bring back Triple H. The guy made no money except for the guy he was wrestling against. I'm not going to turn in, I'm not going to tune in to see Triple H. No one. I didn't tune in to see Triple H back when he was Triple H.
I just, whenever somebody mentions him now, I just remember that time that Sting came in and they were like, oh, you're excited, you know, who you got for Sting, Triple H? And I was like, not Sting.
Yeah.
Boy, was I right.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything else? Right. I'm right often. People don't like to admit that, but whatever. That's not my, it's not my problem. Anything else this week in wrestling that
this
I have missed?
In wrestling. No, outside of those two things. A very special new Stone Cold, the Skull Session with Stone Cold Steve Austin is a special guest, Bailey. Very enlightening.
That.
Yeah.
So I haven't watched it yet, but I'm very much looking forward to that.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PI, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends, so for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on.
Yeah, podcasts, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510, is he declaring an emergency? There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcast.
Yes. And for those of you, WWE on their network, three very great specials, tribute to Brody Lee and to Luke Harper. And some of his best matches are now available on the WWE Network with the Wyatt family versus the Shield and him as a solo. So WWE did a very great job and a very touching tribute to Brody Lee and to Luke Harper.
I found it interesting, and it was annoying and sickening at the same time, where this battle about who had a better tribute for the dead guy.
Mm-hmm.
Was happening, but I found it interesting. Much as I would take the opportunity to always crap on Vince,
mm-hmm.
they were damned if they did, damned if they didn't.
Yeah.
If they would have done the tribute the same night as AEW, they would have been damned for doing it the same night at the company he was currently working for at the time.
Right.
And waiting, they were damned.
Mm-hmm.
Damned if they did, damned if they didn't.
Yeah. But see, I didn't damn them for not doing it on the same night as AEW.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he didn't work for the WWE at the time, and he was a current employee for AEW. And it's like, we all love the man, so we don't have to compete over who loved him more or who had the better produced package. Of
exactly how it came off to me.
Yeah.
Who liked him more?
Yeah.
And the wife's like, yeah, you know, I just lost my husband. Can we start with the dick measure?
Yeah,
that'd be great.
Yeah, but if but if there was someone who damned WWE for not having it on the same day, it wasn't me, and I certainly didn't have any problem. We knew he wasn't going to be ignored, and he wasn't. You know, plenty of wrestlers, you know, even Heels broke kayfabe to talk about how much they love Brody Lee. Randy Orton's tribute was very touching to him. So was Bray Wyatt's. And people, guys broke down. New Day broke down on WWE. Right? And so it's very real. So in that case, I don't, when, in something like that, and the last time I saw something like that was when Eddie passed. You know, the WWE did something, and TNA, you know, the Dudleys and Rhino all gave a tribute to Eddie before their matches. Because guys like that are beloved where, with all the guys, with all the boys, with everyone they touched, it's rare. And while we can't do anything about the current project, Dan, we can talk about when wrestling was great. Or near great, or at least better than whatever the hell they're putting out on TV now is. So let's mind the black and white screen, shall we? Because we're going to take a trip back in the Wayback Machine, back when titles were called belts, back when there was professional wrestling in all 50 states and people could huddle with each other without fear of disease or reprisals. Back when sports entertainment was indeed professional wrestling. There are only two dates that I wanted to bring up this week in pro wrestling history because I think they're, one is timely because it still occurs to this day, and one is just so happened to happen in this week in history that kind of what's happening now kind of contemporizes it, if that's a word. But we'll go back to January 11th.
Today's the 13th. We're talking about
today's the 13th. Yeah, gotcha. I only have two dates, one January 11th and one January 13th. Well, yeah, January 11th, 1993, from the Manhattan Center, okay, with the broadcast team of Vince McMahon, Randy Savage, and Rob Bartlett with the premiere episode of, if I get my Vince McMahon voice here, Monday Night Raw. Uncooked, uncensored, un-something or other. But that January 11th, 1993, almost 30 years, the debut of Monday Night Raw. And the matches at the time, the late, great Yokozuna defeated Coco Beware. Shawn Michaels defeated Max Moon. And The Undertaker pinned Damian Demento.
It's funny. I just, in my travels of being chronological WWE, I just passed the... I forgot the date in 1992, but it's Conan, and I actually forgot what they called him, but he's wearing the Max Moon gear, what became Max Moon gear, and it's so fucking odd to see him wearing that crap.
I think I saw that match because he wrestled a juicer. He wrestled Art Barr in that dark match in the WWF, if I recall.
I think that's correct. I believe that's correct. It was one of those things where I'd be interested to see this, and then it was done. I was like, all right, cool.
I forget his name too. But interesting part about that Monday Night Raw, Dan, the dark match on the very first Monday Night Raw saw the Cheetah Kid defeat Johnny Rotten.
Wow.
And
wow.
A year later, Cheetah Kid, who of course is Ted Petty, changed his name to Rocco Rock. Johnny Rotten would change his name to Johnny Grunge and the Public Enemy. Maybe ECW's first superstar tag team. And the only
certainly
team
the whitest.
Only team to have a bidding war between the WWF and the WCW at the time. Little did they know, both were getting fool's gold, but the Public Enemy, Rocco, Cheetah Kid defeated Johnny Rotten, but less than a year later, those same two men would join forces in Philadelphia and form the Public Enemy. Here comes the hot step.
The worst.
Now, Rocco, he couldn't. I think one of the funny memories of them, it wasn't even them, it was when the Dudleys came out pretending to be Public Enemy. And Bubba took the mic and doing his Johnny Grunge impression. Oh, Rocco, I'm already blown up from dancing. And then Devon hits him and goes, shut up, Johnny, we got to play tonight.
It's amazing. It's so funny you mention that, but it's amazing to know that, I mean, they got to the WWF and it was a giant cluster F, but
yeah.
They were so over at ECW. They were so over. And in retrospect, you're like, I can't say this really because it's disrespectful. They're dead. But looking back, you're like, oh, man.
The signing of Public Enemy. Now, WCW threw the most money at them, so just so the WWF wouldn't get them.
Yeah.
To bring them over, okay? And they won the WCW Tag Team Championship briefly. And then after they got left there.
They were so over, though.
Yeah. And they went to the WWF. But if anything, Dan, the bidding war between the WCW and the WWE over Public Enemy showed the booking genius of Paul Heyman. Because because both Vince and Eric Bischoff saw Public Enemy matches in ECW, saw all the mayhem, saw all the fans going crazy, and the tossing in the chairs and stuff like that, all you were seeing was how Paulie booked the Public Enemy in a match with no chairs, we had to stay in the ring. That's not Public Enemy. That's not how they were booked. Public Enemy, and no disrespect, like you said, no disrespect to the dead, no disrespect to Ted Petty or Johnny Grunge. They were smoke and mirrors. They were an ECW tag team, and that worked only for ECW. The Dudley Boys could work anywhere. The Public Enemy could only work in ECW.
Pretty much,
And that's what we saw. That was the booking genius of Paul Heyman. Mikey Whipwreck could work in ECW. Mikey Whipwreck was not going to work in any other company except ECW because of Paul Heyman. But January 11th, 1993, it all started at the Manhattan Center in New York City in the shadow of Madison Square Garden, the very first Monday Night Raw. Another significant event happened January 13th, today, and I'm going to get to that. But first, Dan, if I may, a little history.
Please.
Yes, it's where I'm setting up. I have to establish the foundation to get to the actual date in question. Back in 1958, a wrestler by the name of Roscoe, you like that name?
Roscoe, yeah, I wonder why.
Roscoe Monroe Brumbaugh was a professional wrestler in Tennessee, and he wanted to make a big name for himself. And he had a good look. He had a voice like he sounded like he gargled razor blades, and he had a big chest, and he had dark hair, but he had a white stripe down the side of it. So he had an interesting look, and he wanted to be was making his way for himself in Tennessee, but he wanted to be a big star. And the thing is, even though he wrestled in Memphis in Tennessee, during the late 50s, early 60s, you know, there wasn't a whole lot of integration. And one day he was coming to the wrestling arena, and he saw a hitchhiker, and he picked him up. And it turns out it was a man who was wanted to see the wrestling matches. So, yeah, come on in. I'll take it. And he liked the guy so much, he not only walked him in, he walked him into the ring with him. But this man was a black man, and he saw the way the crowd reacted to Mr. Monroe walking in with a black man, and the crowd was so incensed that they called him. There's only so many names you can call a white man in the South. You can call a black man a lot of stuff, but in the white man in the South. And they called the worst name they could think to call him. And now this is the late 50s, so it was during the Cold War.
boy.
So to them, they call them Sputnik because you are worse than a Russian. You associated with a man like this, you're a comrade. You're a Sputnik. And the name stuck. So Sputnik Monroe got his name. Roscoe Monroe Birnbaugh was no longer Roscoe. He was Sputnik. Nothing against Roscoe.
No, I understand. I understand. Well, our dog's an Ottawa Senator fan anyway. He's a enemy.
Well, Roy Lee Welch in Memphis got a TV deal. Got himself a TV studio and got wrestling on TV in Memphis. And he needed a star. There was Sputnik Monroe on TV talking about all the hillbillies and rednecks in Tennessee. You're just moonshine swilling, beer swilling jerks. You don't have the, you don't even deserve the right to see someone as good as me in the ring. Well, what do you know? The white fans booed him. Couldn't stand. How dare you make fun of us? But the black fans thought he was great. Thought he was hysterical. And the thing about Sputnik Monroe, he wasn't doing that to get black fans. He was just doing that to be a heel. But, of course, he started insulting the people of Memphis, calling them moonshine-swilling redneck.
What?
And the thing about Sputnik Monroe, he liked to party. He liked to go out. He liked to drink. He liked to carouse. And the place to do that in Memphis was on Beale Street. Thing is, Beale Street back then was in an all-black neighborhood. And if you were white, you didn't go down there. Thing is, Sputnik didn't care. So he went down there. And he started becoming known, especially because of his heel promos against the ignorant fans in Memphis. He became a celebrity among the black crowd. When he would go wrestle and they would go see him. They'd see him on, they watched him on TV and they, you know, he'd come down to Beale Street, you know, once a week. So after the matches, and they couldn't wait to hang out with him. The matches were going on in Ellis Auditorium. It was before the Mid-South Coliseum. The Ellis Auditorium, and they had their matches. They had their your regular crowds on the bottom, but up top was a very narrow balcony where all the black people who wanted to watch wrestling could sit, and they called that Crow's Nest. All people that were up there. Well, because of the popularity of Sputnik Monroe and bringing all these black fans there, the Crow's Nest would fill up and they'd be turning thousands of black people away from the wrestling match. Meanwhile, all the ground section where all the white people sat had plenty of room that no one was sitting at. And so the promoters went to Roy. He said, Roy, we got a problem here. He goes, what's the problem? He goes, well, we're turning away thousands of people here, and we still have seats in the building. So why is that? He said, well, there are black fans coming. So because we can't have black fans sitting with white fans, we'll start a riot. And Roy said, last I checked, making money was riot-proof. So let's find a work way around that. At this time, Sputnik Monroe was on TV saying, well, if you won't let my black fans come see me, I don't even want to wrestle for you guys anymore. I'm gone. So that didn't sit well with Roy, and it didn't sit well with other wrestling fans. So when Sputnik went back to Beale Street, which he is now a regular now, and he went with another wrestler who was a friend of his, they were arrested. January 13th, 1960, Sputnik Monroe was arrested by the Memphis police on the charge of public mopery, which is a fancy word for seeing loitering or trespassing. He was arrested and made all the newspapers, made every newspaper in Tennessee. The Bulls of Memphis was arrested for being in a black bar. And he was put in jail, and he had to appear in court. So Sputnik Monroe hired himself a lawyer, Russell P. Sugarman, who was a character in and of himself because he dressed just like a Russell B. Sugarman would dress. Loud clothes, big fat green tie. And Russell P. Sugarman and Sputnik Monroe, I should say, became the first white man ever to be defended by a black man in Memphis, Tennessee. That had never been done before. A black man had never represented a white man in a court of law. And that's what happened. And Russell P. Sugarman stood up before the court and asked the judge and the arresting officers, what exactly was the charge? You said it was Mopri. Was he standing around too long? It's a public place. It's a bar. Goes, that's right. Was he causing a disturbance? Was he loud? Was he throwing chairs? Was he causing a ruckus? No. Was he sitting down at a dining table? Goes, no, he was standing at a bar. So what exactly is the charge? And the officer kind of broke down and said, well, basically it was that he was a white man in a black bar, in a black part of town. But Russell P. Sugarman took it upon himself to cite a Supreme Court law, Dan. It said in the Supreme Court, the law was a white man could eat in or drink in any establishment in the country he wanted, including a black bar. Black man couldn't do that. Black person couldn't do that, man or woman.
Yeah.
But the Supreme side of the Supreme Court said a white man can eat or drink in any establishment he so chooses. So that's how Sputnik Monroe got off from his arrest January 13th, 1960.
It's amazing that it worked out that way. The law that was segregating black and white people was the law, part of the law that got him out of trouble. That's just stupid.
And the rest is history. Once his release came out, Roy Lee Welch saw the groundswell of support for him, let open the Ellis Auditorium to everyone, black people and white people, for the first time we're sitting together, and he had sold out crowds from all the people that couldn't get in before in the crow's nest that were turned away can now walk in and seat alongside, and there were no riots. There was and there was obviously there were fights with the fans and against the bad guys, but there were no black and white, black versus white riots within the crowd. Everything that they had feared did not come to pass. They just wanted to see wrestling. They wanted to support Sputnik Monroe, and that's what they did. Sputnik Monroe became more so of a. Not only did he wipe out Jim Crow wrestling in Memphis and in the South, he became a touchstone and a hero to kids of all ages. You look back in old yearbook photos in Tennessee, Nashville, Memphis high schools in the early 60s, mid-60s, you would see kids, black and white, with a little white stripe down their hair because trying to copy Sputnik Monroe. There was a one of Sam Phillips's kids, the owner of Sun Records. They were huge fans of Sputnik Monroe, and they remember seeing an old black woman coming up to Sputnik Monroe. This is after he had been retired for many years. Came up to him and said, "I love wrestling, but I couldn't get up to the crow's nest because I walk with a cane and I couldn't get up there. It's because of you I could sit on the floor and enjoy wrestling. And that wouldn't have happened because of you." And that's the only time they ever saw Sputnik Monroe cry. And, Dan, if you ever go down to the Rock and Soul Museum in Memphis, Tennessee, and you'll see displays of Elvis Presley, B.B. King, Ray Charles, Johnny Cash, you will also see in a prominent display the ring jacket and boots of Sputnik Monroe.
Wow. I did not know that.
Yes.
That is how – it's crazy how that was – I mean, that's a big deal. The whole story that you told is amazing. But to be able to get next to Cash and – or get in the same building as Cash and Elvis, man. And he didn't even have to steal anything from the black man like Elvis did.
Nope.
I said it.
Oh. Yep. But yeah, January 13th, 1960 was when Sputnik was the most popular heel, I should say, in wrestling in Tennessee. Did Garth Mowbray for drinking in an all-black bar.
Now, I don't want you to end your segment yet.
Mm-hmm.
I still want you to, because that's all you have, right?
That is all I have.
Okay, so I'm going to pull an audible and actually add something. So I still want you to end it when we're done.
Okay.
But I wanted to add one more thing. And I really feel bad because that's a good place to end the Wrestling Historian because of the timing of the other BS that happened this mm-hmm. week.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel, you knowing me as well as you do, we must talk about this.
We must talk about this.
The next day, and I'm going to say something that's going to make me feel really old. You being the young-looking man that you are going to laugh at me.
Mm-hmm.
On January 14th, 2001, also known as WCW Sin, was the day that some moron convinced Sid Vicious into jumping off the top rope and snapping his leg in two because a guy who's 6'11 needed more aerial offense.
And that was the day Sid Vicious became the Joe Theismann of professional wrestling.
Oh, man. And first of all, 20 years. I was 17, maybe. I'll do the math later. I was either turning 17 in August or had turned 17. I think I was 16 mm-hmm. when this happened. And the point I love bringing about it, the pay-per-view is a pretty good pay-per-view. The main event is a garbage.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was one of those convoluted things where they were sticking so much into it, and then they missed the leg break because they're revealing the fact that this guy who's been hooded, beating the crap out of people for a month, was freaking Road Warrior Animal. So on top of the fact that you're like, oh, it's Animal. Great. On top of that, you have a man laying in the ring with his foot flopping like this, his leg from
the right angle.
Yeah, hanging like this while they're kicking him. They miss it. They don't. And then the PS to that is the other best part about it is on Nitro they're like, hey, the thing you didn't see last night that's going to take Sid out of action for about a year and a half, we're going to show it to you in slow motion on TNT. Here you go. Of all the things, like, I never turned away from it because I was like, wow, I'm fascinated that a leg can do that.
Yeah.
And just bounce right back into place. Of all the things I've seen and all the nasty shit I've seen,
mm-hmm.
I've never gotten queasy watching wrestling. It just doesn't bother me. And I think it was because I looked down right at the moment it happened, then looked up and saw it, and it kind of took me by surprise. But remember when Brock Lesnar elbowed Randy Orton in the face and just Randy Orton sits up and all this blood pools out?
Mm-hmm.
Randomly got a sick stomach to that. I didn't throw up, but I was like, oh, fuck. But this, I was absolutely blown away. I was like, the body can do that? Like, that's insane. And then years later, you find out that you and I have debated Sid Vicious mm-hmm. for years. I like Sid. There was a whole lot of nothing in ring, but I liked Sid. He didn't have to do a lot. He was 6 goddamn 11. It didn't matter. He had a personality. We could debate he couldn't talk, but it didn't matter. He had a personality. He didn't need 18 moves. He had 7. Mm-hmm. He had 8. That's it. That's all you needed. He could still go. That was it. The fact that somebody argued with this dude that he needed aerial offense when you're 6'11" still baffles me to this day. And the one they came up with was the one thing that would have got him injured in the first place.
Yeah.
Which was a single-legged leg dive. Leg drop.
He was doing a super kick off the second rope.
Yeah. Just do a freaking clothesline. You're 6'11".
Exactly.
Of all the things he said no to, he didn't go, you're an asshole. I'm not doing that.
Oh, it just baffles me to this day. I had to mention it. Not only is it the third to last pay-per-view in WCW history, but all the easily avoided. Easily avoided. And here we're talking about it 20 years later. Great.
And it's the and speaking of the 20 years later, interesting note about that pay-per-view, WW Sin, which they have never done. They've never, as a first, last, and only.
Thank God.
But here's the callback. That was the last ever WCW match for Goldberg.
Did he lose that? That's right. He did lose that one.
That was his last one.
Yes, that's right. What a... I'm on the Bobby Heenan thing as far as Goldberg goes. Goldberg should have never lost.
No.
Ever. Ever. Ever, ever. Ever.
Mm-hmm.
What else did you have?
Yeah.
Apparently nothing. Yeah, I got nothing else to say. I just thought that's an honorable mention for the wrestling historian. because nobody remembers WCW Sin. They remember Sid snapping his fucking leg.
Yeah.
And
that's probably why, because Sin will always be reminded. Sin is the leg break.
It's not a bad pay-per-view, but it's generally easily to be forgotten.
Yes.
Except you have Snap, Crackle, Pop.
Yeah, and that's why there's only been the first, last, and only WCW Sin pay-per-view
that's
ever been.
That's one of the reasons, sure.
Yeah. And that's it.
I just want to point out to people that the only reason you didn't see a bunch of gore is because of his tall boots.
Yeah.
If he was wearing shorter boots and not his pants,
there
is I don't know if they'd ever be able to show it.
No.
Because his bone broke through his leg.
It was a compound fracture. Yeah.
Compound fracture. They have a new name for it 20 years later. I don't care. I'm calling it a compound fracture. So that means you would have seen his bone sticking out of his leg. That's how close that was, folks.
Very ugly.
In fact, the reason why it bounced, snapped back into place, quote unquote, or fell back into place, because the boot was on.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I just, in the replay, you just see him lean down towards his legs going, oh, my God. And he's in shock because the adrenaline's flowing.
Yeah.
I'm sure he felt it, but he didn't. Oh, God. Mm-hmm. Unbelievable. That was 20 years ago. Please, take.
Well, just looking for a break, Dan. See what I did there? Just jump in.
Hold on. Oh, there's water, too much water to make it ring. There.
Okay, I was like, that's not going to make a rim shot. Hey, folks. And that is the Wrestling Historian. And you can follow me, Craig Lagons, CraigLigons, on all social media platforms, namely Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
What you don't see is how professional Craig is behind the scenes and how you'll never see it cut, but it was, which is his seamless. His magic, my magic. HIC Talk Radio. I want to shout out Mark Thompson, who talked us into doing the show last week, who had a scheduling change in his personal life at a shoot job. So when he'll be back, we don't know, but he is always welcome. He is a founding member. He is family. And that is a connection I never want to lose again. So some random week, you might see Mark pop up, or you might figure out a way to do it again. But shout out to Go Thompson on Twitter. Go, Mark. Follow me on Twitter, DanLight83. All social media platforms, actually. Also on Twitch, which you're watching now. On YouTube, which you'll probably watch later, but you're technically watching now if you're seeing this on YouTube. DanLight83 is my point. BCNation.com on your smartphone. On your podcast app on your smartphone. BOC Nation Radio Network. Type that in. You'll find all of our podcasts there. There's hundreds of other podcasts. Bill After, it's the official home of Bill Goddamn After.
Exactly.
VOCNation.com. For Craig Lagons and the non-broken leg of myself, Let's go Flyers. I'm Dan Calchico. We'll see you next week. Good night.
This is Matt Hardy, and you are listening to the VOC Nation.
Rock and Roll Union for the past 2 years has been the place for rock and roll, new rock and roll, debuting rock and roll, and some of the old classics as well. We have welcomed guests from around the world, national artists and more. We have excited many people by our live events. We've welcomed everybody into the fold, and we continue to do so on a weekly basis. Guys, that is Rock and Roll Union, and that is what we do for you.
Saturdays, 6 p.m. Eastern, VOCNation.com.
Since 2012, HIAC Talk Radio has been bringing you the best of independent wrestling and wrestling on the worldwide scale with interviews and other segments, now featuring The Wrestling Historian with Craig Ligon every Thursday night at 6 p.m. at VOCNation.com, or go to your Android or iPhone and type in VOC Nation Radio Network and subscribe to the greatest wrestling podcast network in the world. Listen to HIAC Wrestling Podcasts today.
VOC Nation provides live daily streaming shows where fans have the ability to interact with the hosts and guests by phone call, email, and Twitter. VOC Nation hosts include the legendary Ken Resnick, you probably remember from the AWA and WWE, former WCW performer The Maestro, Wes Briscoe, who you probably remember from Impact, Brady Hicks, who you remember from Pro Wrestling Illustrated, former WWE and TNA star Shelly Martinez, and former Philly radio personality Bruce Wirt. VOC Nation's two most popular shows are Wrestling with History, featuring Ken Resnick and Bruce Wirt, streaming live on Wednesday nights at 9:30 Eastern, and of course, In the Room, featuring Pro Wrestling Illustrated's Brady Hicks and WCW alum The Maestro. And by the way, both of these shows take callers live during the show. What are you waiting for? Go listen live right now at VOCNation.com and subscribe to all of our podcasts by searching for VOC Nation Radio Network on your favorite podcast app. Oh, and follow them on Twitter, too, at VOC Nation.
Hola, this is your amiga, Shelly from Cali. To let you know, you can catch me here on VOC Nation for Shelly Live. You never know what the hell I'm going to be talking about. Sometimes I have guests. Sometimes I let you on in the cheese mess, spill a little tea. Sometimes I cry. You have to tune in to find out why. And I also take your calls. I love chatting with you guys and seeing what the hell you guys are thinking. So meet me here on the VOC Nation. Be there or be square.
The worldwide leader in entertainment. This is the VOC Nation Radio Network.